Right now, millions of people, maybe tens of millions of people, are taking a heart medication that, well, it fundamentally misunderstands how half of their cardiovascular system actually works. I mean, you learn a rule in Biology 101, and you just sort of assume it applies to the entire body. Like, gravity works the exact same whether you drop an apple in New York or Tokyo, right? So, logically, a biological mechanism should work the same, whether you're looking at a heart cell or, say, a blood vessel
It
cell.
is, it's deeply comforting to think that way. We map out a cellular pathway, we solve a complex molecular puzzle in one organ, and then we just kind of copy and paste that solution into the medical textbooks for the rest of the body. I mean, it makes the math of human physiology feel really tidy.
Right, tidy. But then, you look closer with better tools, and suddenly that textbook needs a massive rewrite. We are looking at a biological landscape that is surprisingly deceptive. And today's mission is all about that deception. In this deep dive, we're going to explore how your body manages blood pressure and heartbeats under stress, and how a newly discovered biological plot twist might actually lead to vastly better, much safer cardiovascular medications for you or, people you love.
Which is exactly why we can never stop questioning our baseline assumptions in medical science. A microscopic shift in how a cell communicates well, it can rewrite decades of pharmacological strategy.
Exactly. And our grounding material for this deep dive is a really fascinating 2026 research letter. It was published in the journal Arteriosclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology. It's authored by a team of researchers, Voorhees and colleagues out of UC Davis. And the core mystery we're unpacking today is this: what happens when a universal biological rule about how our cells function turns out to be completely wrong depending on what organ you're looking at?
To really appreciate the twist, we first have to, thoroughly understand the rule. And that story starts with something called a calcium channel, specifically the Kv1.2 channel.
Okay, let's give that a little tangible context for a second. If you picture a single muscle cell, whether that's a cell in your beating heart or like a smooth muscle cell lining the walls of your arteries, that cell is wrapped in a protective membrane. The Kv1.2 channels are essentially these specialized microscopic pores embedded in that membrane. They operate like highly secure doors, and their entire job is to control when and exactly how much calcium gets inside the cell.
Right, and calcium is the absolute master switch for movement here. When those channels open and calcium rushes into the cell, it physically binds to the contractile proteins actin and myosin, causing them to pull together. The muscle squeezes, and then when the channel closes, the calcium is pumped back out and the muscle relaxes.
So if calcium flows in, the blood vessel clamps down. If it stops flowing, the vessel widens, which makes regulating these specific Kv1.2 channels a literal life or death job for the body. I mean, if you or someone you know takes a quote-unquote calcium channel blocker for high blood pressure medications like amlodipine or verapamil, those drugs are quite literally wedging themselves into these microscopic pores to physically block the calcium from entering.
Right, thereby forcing the blood vessels to relax. And because these channels are so central to keeping us alive, the body exerts a massive regulatory control over them. It uses a signaling pathway called pKa protein kinase A as a sort of cellular middleman to manage how sensitive these channels are. Let's look at the heart for a minute. When you experience a sudden fright or intense physical stress, your fight or flight response kicks in.
Adrenaline rush.
Exactly. Adrenaline floods your system, binds to beta-adrenergic receptors on your heart cells, and that wakes up pKa.
And then pKa just races over to the calcium channels and tells them to open wider and stay open longer. More calcium floods in, and your heart pumps much harder and faster to deal with the stress.
Up until very recently, the scientific community believed they had the exact physical mechanism for how pKa accomplished this completely figured out. It centered on a specific regulating protein called RAD, R-A-D.
Right. And the thought was that pKa regulates the calcium channels by interacting with this RAD protein. Basically, pKa adds a chemical tag to RAD, a physical process called phosphorylation. When RAD gets phosphorylated, its shape changes, it detaches from the calcium channel, and the channel's activity just goes way up.
Right, it unblocks it.
Yeah, I actually like to think of the Kv1.2 channel as a secure door to, like an exclusive nightclub. And this RAD protein is a massive biological bouncer standing right next to it, keeping the door shut tight. pKa comes along, hands the bouncer a $20 bill, that's the phosphorylation tag, and the bouncer happily steps aside so the calcium can flood into the club.
I love that analogy. And for the heart, that bribed bouncer model works perfectly. Decades of research back it up. If pKa wants the heart to pump harder, it pays off RAD. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, we start to see the real danger of assuming a universal rule. Just because the bouncer controls the front door of the nightclub doesn't mean he's running security at the back door.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. Because if the heart uses the Radgauser system, what exactly is happening in our blood vessels? Especially when the body isn't facing a sudden lion attack, but rather chronic, severe metabolic stress, like the kind of systemic stress we see with high blood sugar and diabetes.
That is the exact physiological puzzle the UC Davis team set out to solve. In vascular smooth muscle, the tissue wrapping your blood vessels that dictates your blood pressure, things operate under a completely different set of environmental pressures. When a person has chronic high blood sugar or hyperglycemia, it creates a toxic metabolic environment. And strangely enough, that high glucose actually activates the exact same PKA signaling pathway we just talked about.
Wait, hold on. High blood sugar isn't adrenaline. It doesn't trigger those fight or flight beta receptors. So how is glucose waking up PKA in the blood vessels?
It uses a totally different alarm system. It's referred to as the P2Y11-like AC5 axis.
Okay, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. But basically, when blood sugar is excessively high, it stresses the cells, causing them to release a molecule called ATP into the space just outside the cell. That extracellular ATP acts as a danger signal. It binds to a specific receptor on the blood vessel wall, the P2Y11 receptor. That receptor tags in an enzyme called adenylyl cyclase 5, or AC5, which then produces the chemical messenger that finally wakes up PKA.
Oh, wow. So the trigger is completely different metabolic distress instead of a sudden adrenaline spike, but the end result is the exact same. PKA gets activated.
Precisely. And when PKA wakes up in the blood vessels because of high blood sugar, it causes those calcium channels to go into overdrive. They let way too much calcium in, and the blood vessels squeeze shut entirely too tightly.
And this harmful vasoconstriction is a massive driver of the vascular dysfunction and severe high blood pressure we frequently see in patients suffering from diabetes.
Exactly. So the researchers looked at this chain of events and asked the logical question. Okay, high blood sugar activates PKA in the blood vessels, which opens the calcium channels. Is this rad bouncer stepping aside here too, just like he does in the heart?
But wait, let me stop you right there. If the rad protein is physically floating around in the vascular smooth muscle, and PKA is physically floating around in there too, why wouldn't they just link up and do the exact same dance they do in the heart? What physically stops them? It's the exact same chemical, PKA, looking for the exact same bouncer.
Well, in biology, proximity and presence do not guarantee interaction. Just because the players are on the same field doesn't mean they are running the same play. The environment inside a blood vessel cell has different spatial arrangements, different scaffolding proteins, and different microdomains than a heart cell.
Okay, that makes sense.
To prove that the bouncer wasn't doing his job in the blood vessels, the researchers couldn't just guess. They had to actually create a scenario where the bouncer was mathematically and biologically incapable of taking a bribe.
They needed to watch the dance happen at a microscopic level, and they needed tools to physically alter the dancers, which is exactly why they turned to a highly specific molecular toolkit involving genetically modified mice, right?
Yes. They needed to isolate the variables, so they tested three distinct genetic variations. The first group was their baseline normal mice with standard genetics to see how blood vessels naturally react to high sugar.
And then we bring in the custom-built models.
Right. The second group was the 4SA rad mice. In these animals, the researchers altered the genetic code for the rad protein itself. Specifically, they took the four exact spots on the protein where PKA normally attaches that chemical bribe, the phosphorylation tag, and swapped the amino acids out for a different molecule called alanine, which cannot be phosphorylated.
So, going back to our analogy, they essentially engineered a bouncer who absolutely refuses to take a bribe. No matter how many $20 bills PKA tries to hand him, his pockets are sewn shut, he cannot be bribed, which means he will theoretically never step aside to let the calcium in.
That is the functional reality of that mutation, yeah. And the third group was the S1928A mice. In this variation, the rad protein, the bouncer, is perfectly normal, but the calcium channel itself, the door, has a mutation. There is a very specific physical location right on the pore of the channel called site S1928. They mutated that single spot so that the channel itself could not be phosphorylated by PKA.
Okay, so we have three setups. A normal setup, a setup with an unbribable bouncer, and a setup where the door itself is missing a piece of its own lock.
Yes. And to kick off the test, the researchers took the blood vessel cells from all three of these genetic lines and exposed them to a heavy dose of sugar, 20 millimol D-glucose. They're simulating severe diabetic hyperglycemia in a petri dish to force that PKA pathway to turn on.
But this raises an important question. How do you actually measure what happens next? Because the methodology here is incredibly rigorous. They didn't just, like, slap a blood pressure cuff on a mouse. They looked at the physics of the cell from three entirely different vantage points. First, they used a technique called direct stochastic optical reconstruction microscopy, or STORM.
Yeah, STORM is incredible.
For anyone who hasn't spent time in a molecular biology lab, what does STORM actually let you see?
Well, normal microscopes are limited by the physical wavelength of light. Everything smaller than a certain point just kind of blurs together into a blob. STORM bypasses this by using special fluorescent dyes attached to the proteins. They hit the cell with lasers that make individual fluorescent molecules randomly blink on and off, one at a time.
Like a strobe light?
Kind of, yeah. And a computer records thousands of these single blinks and then reconstructs an image with mind-boggling resolution. It allowed the team to literally watch individual calcium channels clustering together on the cell membrane in real time.
That is amazing. They can visually watch the doors grouping together. But they didn't stop at just looking at them, did they?
No, because they needed to see if the doors were actually opening. So they used patch clamp electrophysiology. They take a microscopic glass pipette, seal it over a tiny patch of the cell membrane containing these channels, and measure the literal electrical current down in picoamps of the positively charged calcium ions flowing into the cell.
Wow.
And finally, to see the macroscopic result, they used pressure myography. They mounted the actual microscopic arteries of these mice, pressurized them to 60 millimeters of mercury to simulate blood pressure, and measured how hard the artery physically constricted when the high glucose hit.
They threw the absolute gold standard of laboratory techniques at this problem. I mean, they visually watched the proteins, they electrically measured the calcium flow, and physically measured the artery squeezing. And they did all of this in both male and female mice to guarantee there were no sex-based differences skewing the data.
The stage was perfectly set. When the high glucose hit the cells and the PKA pathway fired up, which of our genetic mutations actually stopped the blood vessels from dangerously constricting? The answer completely shatters the universal rule we started with.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Before even looking at the mutations, the researchers had to double-check their basic geography. Was Rad, our bouncer, even standing next to the door in the blood vessels? They used a technique called a proximity ligation assay.
Right. It uses antibodies with tiny DNA tags that only light up if they are within 40 nanometers of each other.
And sure enough, the cells lit up. Rad is physically hanging out in the blood vessels, practically leaning against the calcium channels.
But then they hit the cells with the high glucose. The PKA alarm bells go off, and Rad didn't budge. The distance between the calcium channels and the Rad protein didn't change by a single nanometer. The bouncer just stood there, completely ignoring the PKA signal.
Wait, if the bouncer isn't moving, how are the channels opening? Because in the normal baseline mice, the high glucose definitely caused the calcium channels to supercluster together, right?
Right.
The electrical calcium current spiked and the arteries clamped down hard. The system was broken by the sugar.
Exactly. And here is the crucial piece of evidence. In the 4SA rad mice, the ones genetically engineered to have an unbribable bouncer, the exact same pathological cascade happened. The high sugar caused the channels to cluster, the calcium spiked, and the arteries constricted dangerously.
Wow.
Mutating Rad didn't stop the vascular response at all. Rad was completely irrelevant to the entire process.
So the bouncer is physically there, but he's basically just a useless bystander when it comes to blood vessels. The PKA signal is completely bypassing him.
Completely. But we finally look at the third group, the S1928A mice, the animals where the specific molecular keypad on the calcium channel itself was mutated. In these mice, when exposed to the massive dose of sugar, absolutely nothing happened.
Great, nothing.
Nothing. The STORM microscopy showed the calcium channels did not supercluster. The patch clamp showed the calcium electrical current did not spike. And the pressure myography confirmed the arteries did not abnormally constrict. By simply breaking that one specific site directly on the channel, the high glucose had practically no pathological effect.
So tying this all the way back to our analogy, it turns out the front door, the heart, absolutely uses the bouncer to regulate entry. But the back door, the blood vessels, they completely ignore the bouncer. They use a totally different molecular keypad site, S1928, right on the doorframe itself. It's a fundamentally distinct regulatory logic for the exact same pKa signal.
It is a phenomenal demonstration of tissue-specific regulation. The cardiovascular system is using highly distinct molecular strategies to tune calcium influx based entirely on geography. A heart cell and a vascular smooth muscle cell use completely different tools to solve the exact same biological problem.
Okay, so what does this all actually mean? We've gone incredibly deep into the microscopic weeds of genetic mutations, blinking lasers, and cellular alarms, but let's connect this back to your daily life. Why does this molecular keypad, this microscopic S1928 site, matter for your future health?
It matters fundamentally. First, at a basic science level, this definitively overturns the long-held assumption in the medical field that pKa regulation of calcium channels is universally mediated by the RAD protein. We now know that rule is false.
Right.
In the blood vessels, metabolic stress from diabetes specifically engages this S1928 pathway, bypassing RAD entirely.
Which is huge, because if you or someone you know takes blood pressure medication, you know that current drugs are incredibly blunt instruments. Calcium channel blockers like amlodipine are like using a sledgehammer. You take them to relax your blood vessels and lower your blood pressure. But because they blindly block calcium channels everywhere, they also hit your heart muscle.
What's truly fascinating here is the sheer therapeutic potential. Because the heart relies on RAD and the blood vessels rely on S1928, we suddenly have two distinct, highly specific targets. Drug developers could potentially create next-generation therapies for diabetic vascular complications and hypertension that act like a scalpel instead of a sledgehammer. They could design a drug that chemically blocks the S1928 pathway specifically.
Which would stop the blood vessels from constricting dangerously under the metabolic stress of high blood sugar or obesity. It would lower the blood pressure right at the source of the dysfunction.
And because the heart doesn't rely on S1928 for its critical fight-or-flight responses, this hypothetical new drug wouldn't interfere with the heart's natural RAD pathway at all. You could effectively cure the vascular disease while virtually eliminating the dangerous cardiac side effects like drastically slowed heart rates or fluid or retention that plague current broader medications.
That's the holy grail of pharmacology, right? Maximum therapeutic benefit for the blood vessels with zero collateral damage to the heart. It really makes you appreciate just how incredibly specialized human biology is. We evolved to use completely different microscopic mechanisms to control the exact same cellular gatekeeper, depending entirely on whether that cell lives in an artery or a ventricle.
It is an elegant, highly evolved system, and this study by Voorhees and her colleagues at UC Davis proves that we still have so much to learn about the basic operating principles of our own physiology. The textbook is never truly finished.
It certainly makes you view those neat and tidy biological rules with a healthy dose of skepticism. We've seen today how a seemingly universal assumption was shattered by careful, rigorous science. By looking closer, researchers revealed a hidden biological keypad that could completely change the future of cardiovascular medicine, saving millions of people from the side effects of blunt force treatments.
The most exciting discoveries often come not from finding something completely new, but from realizing that something familiar behaves in a completely unexpected way.
Absolutely. And I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over today. If our bodies have secretly developed entirely different operating systems for the exact same cellular channels just a few inches apart, how many other universal rules of human biology, the ones dictating the medications you take right now, are just waiting to be disproven? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the obvious, and we'll catch you next time.